from Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Toddcast. As we wrote today in First Read, Tuesday was supposed to be all about political primaries and runoffs and a check-in on Donald Trump's grip on the Republican Party. Instead, we're grappling again with another mass shooting, this time at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas, where 19 children and two teachers were killed. The coming days will be and should be dominated by questions on how and why and what next, and we're going to get to that today. We're also looking into the results of yesterday's primaries. And don't forget, it's the low, super low turnout in primaries that perhaps gives us these laws that many people complain about. But we are going to look at yesterday's primaries. The Bush dynasty seems to have hit an end. Alabama's Republican Senate primary is headed to a runoff. But the big story, of course, is what happened in Georgia as they delivered a thumping loss to former President Donald Trump after incumbent Governor Brian Kemp basically won so easily you wouldn't be wrong if you wondered if he was essentially unopposed. That is how big his number was over former U.S. Senator David Perdue. So the key question now is, really, there's only one question. How will Trump handle this? My guests today are Greg Bluestein. He's a political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, also an NBC News political analyst from Georgia, and Mark Murray, our NBC News political unit senior editor, and of course, my partner in crime on First Read. So Greg and Mark, welcome. Look, I want to start with the massacre because, Mark, you know, one of the things we talk about when we hear this conversation, and everybody says, it's time to have this conversation. It's time to focus our politics on it. Probably the most important fact that everybody needs to understand about the politics of guns is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we cannot think of a single person who's ever lost a race because they weren't, they didn't advocate for gun control. And until we meet that moment, I don't know how the politics of this issue changes.
Yeah, Chuck, you know, I'm absolutely heartbroken by what ended up happening. And it really does hit close to home. I'm a Texan from a town that's not too dissimilar from Uvalde, Texas. I also, have a son who's in the fourth grade. And so, you know, what ended up happening is just devastating. But you mentioned our politics, and our politics don't reflect the 80 to 20 or 90 to 10 polling that people often say when they talk about, hey, look, support for universal background checks is a 90-10 issue or an 80-20 issue. When we look at our 2019 NBC News poll, last time we kind of asked this kind of question, we asked a question on, are you more concerned that you will not do enough to regulate firearms or you will go too far in restricting firearms? And Chuck, it was essentially a jump ball. 50% said that you're not going to go do enough to regulate firearms. 45% who said you will go too far in restricting them. Another way to look at this, Chuck, is that right after the Newtown massacre in December of 2012, Democrats had just elected in 55 Democratic senators. And now that number stands at 50. They lost people like the Democratic senators Blanche Lincoln and Mark Pryor in Arkansas, Mark Begich in Alaska, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, Claire McCaskill in Missouri. And while I don't think
all quote unquote considered pro-gun candidates at the time, by the way.
And I don't think that they only lost because of the gun issue. But when we talk about the Democrats' ability to make change, and even if you got rid of the filibuster, the ability to make change is less today than it was in December of 2012. Yeah. And to me, that's one of the important political realities. The other political reality, and this is ironically The gun lobby is a shell of what it was in 2012, 10 years ago.
Yeah, but that's the irony.
It's really hard to actually find Republicans who are willing to cross the aisle on this issue. The Pat Toomeys of the world, well, they're leaving the United States Senate. Are you able to get a Lisa Murkowski, a Susan Collins? Just the ability to make our politics function. Chuck, just 10 years later after Newtown, the math just doesn't add up.
No, it feels like paralysis. Greg, let's go to Georgia here. Brian Kemp, one of his first actions in order to sort of appeal to the Republican base was what?
Well, he ran the infamous Jake shotgun ad where he's sitting next to a teenage actor playing the boyfriend of one of his three daughters. And he kind of brandishes the shotgun in Jake's direction and cocks it and, you know, says, basically, you better respect my daughter. And that shows you what a powerful message that is in the Republican primary, because all these years later, back then, I mean, now he's a powerful incumbent who just staved off a Trump-backed challenger. But back then, he was running in fourth place, third or fourth place, going for a runoff spot against the favorite, the party favorite, Casey Cagle. Mm-hmm. And it was that ad, to this day, it was that ad that his campaign thinks got him into that number two spot and got him in position, ironically, to get Donald Trump's endorsement and to win the runoff back in 2018, because it got him so much attention. You know, national media was outraged and was covering it. And he loved it. He soaked up all that attention and said, yep, I am that politically incorrect messenger.
You know, it's interesting you put it that way, Greg. The success, Republicans often are able to use the gun issue as an own the libs, right? I mean, you know, it'll really piss off liberals, conceal carry, right? Rather than, is this a good policy?
Yeah. And we're seeing that clash again, because this concealed carry law that Governor Kemp signed into law just a few months ago is going to be front and center. He calls it constitutional carry. And Stacey Abrams, his Democratic opponent, calls it criminal carry. So there'll be a clash over gun rights once again. But look, I mean, you know, in Georgia, we also had a test case in 2018 of going the other direction. For years, for decades, every single statewide Democratic candidate who had any sort of credible shot not only ran, didn't touch gun control, but they ran as NRA Democrats. And Stacey Abrams proved in 2018 that, hey, you know, running on a message of gun control doesn't doom you in a statewide election. She came within, you know, the closest gubernatorial race in Georgia in decades. And once again, is going to be putting that issue front and center.
But Mark, I mean, let you sort of expand out to the swing states. And, you know, Joshua Johnson was sort of hinting at this last night. He's like, what's John Fetterman's message going to be on guns? Right? And what is the party, you know, want his message to be on guns?
Yeah. Look, I mean, Chuck, and we talk about the, you know, do you want more restrictions, less restrictions, and it's a jump ball polling. To me, the Democrats are probably in a sweeter spot when they talk about, we want to eliminate AR-15s and assault weapons, and to be able to say, if you have family shotguns and you like hunting, we have no interest in touching that. We, you know, if you want to have a handgun for your own personal use and be, you are able to pass background checks and training. But, you know, Chuck, you know, we talk about Democrats and even Joe Manchin, who would probably end up encompassing this, was today bemoaning the, hey, why can't we just end up having common sense gun laws? And, and again, our politics today just don't allow for common sense solutions.
Well, it doesn't. And the cable news environment encourages those that don't like the compromise to essentially go on their favorite cable channel, complain about it, fundraise off of it, you know, and stand on what they claim is principle. But what they've really done is just paralyze the ability to do anything again. And you could just sort of see the contours of that shaping up. Let's make a subtle shift here to what happened this week in Georgia being ground zero. So Greg, the seeds of Brian Kemp's success began when?
Even against David Perdue. You know, I think it was the decision by Major League Baseball to pull out the All-Star game. So this was long before David Perdue got in the race.
Summer of 21, right? Summer of 21?
Yep. Yeah. It was around April of 21. Because I remember I was on spring break with my kids and I said, oh crap, I've got to work. so, you know, at the time, Brian Kemp was being booed at at Republican rallies. He was getting showered with criticism, hecklers. Hecklers
it was ugly.
Everywhere.
I remember that.
It was very ugly. Yeah. I mean, he even got booed at the Georgia GOP convention. But it was the that moment where he started to reframe the narrative. It took him a long time, right? But it was that moment where he felt like he had his mojo back, that he did 77 media interviews in a span of a week. He railed against Major League Baseball. He blamed Stacey Abrams for MLB's decision to pull out the All-Star game. He was able to attack President Biden because he called the voting restrictions that led to the new voting law that led MLB to pull out the All-Star game. He blamed Joe Biden for calling it Jim Crow 2.0 and ratcheting up the rhetoric. And it really helped rally Republicans behind him. You know, these are the Republicans that don't go to these activist meetings and, you know, county GOP meetings on the weekends where he was getting booed. These were the rank and file Republicans that, you know, were with their kids on those weekends playing Little League sports and those kinds of things. So he felt like that was the moment he could show them that he was a fighter. And then, you know, as rumors kept on rising that David Perdue was going to run, look, it was a toss up when David Perdue got in the race in December. It really was. There was polls showing it very close, especially once Donald Trump's endorsement, you know.
Well, that's what convinced Perdue to go ahead and do it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the polling seemed to indicate this was winnable.
It was winnable because you had a vulnerable Republican incumbent. But what they didn't account for was, A, the limits of Donald Trump's endorsement 6 months later, but B, all the steps, the extraordinary steps that Brian Kemp would take to ward off David Perdue's challenge. I mean, he pulled out all the stops. He pushed a very conservative legislative agenda and got every single one of his priorities passed. And these were things that had been gummed up, had been at a standstill for a long time, including that gun bill we talked about that rolls back gun restrictions for concealed weapons, but also education policies like we saw in Virginia that are catered to conservatives, the transgender sports ban, income tax slash that he signed in David Perdue's hometown. He was able to announce the two biggest economic development projects, two automakers coming to Georgia worth about 15,000 jobs. He was able to announce
including an electric car automaker that was supposed to be politically problematic for him. I guess
two of
that
them,
really,
Rivian and
that prevented him from getting 75% instead of 72.
Exactly. And he steered clear of some of those parochial issues that David Perdue, you know, all that David Perdue was left to really exploit because Kemp had done all these other things was, hey, I've got Trump's endorsement, you know, which got him a quarter of the vote or so, and very niche issues. Like he opposed one of the car plants.
And didn't he try like an abortion ban late? You know, right after the leak decision, it was like you could tell it was spaghetti at the wall time for
it
Perdue
was.
When he did that
he
one.
Pushed yeah. for Kemp. He said, "If I was governor, I would call a special session to outlaw all abortion." And that, you know, we had just gone in Georgia in 2019 through a brutal fight for still a sweeping abortion restriction, but not an outright ban on all abortion, and it only passed by one vote. So Governor Kemp is a realist, right? He knows that he can't, even if he wanted to, you can't in this environment pass that again. That goes even further. But David Perdue can say whatever he wanted to, and he tried to make that his message.
You know, Mark, the bottom line is Trump, first of all, I think we've learned this. The single, other than defeating a sitting president, defeating a sitting governor is one of the hardest things to do in American politics. We've seen, you know, Sarah Palin pulled it off against a Frank Murkowski. He was extraordinarily unpopular at the time, but it just rarely happens. It is so hard in general elections. You don't see many, you know, governors usually get a second term, right? They just do, right? In New Hampshire with their 2-year terms, it's rare that anybody loses after that first 2-year term. It is so hard to knock off an incumbent governor. But to me, and you tell me, I think it's the Secretary of State race that is the salt in this Trump wound.
Yeah. And Chuck, you know, Brad Raffensperger ended up getting more than 50% of the vote in that Secretary of State race.
Or twice what David Perdue got, right? That's one of my favorite little stats people
more than twice,
out.
Right?
Yeah.
And look, I love what Greg was just kind of going through on all the different things.
It was really important.
Kemp was able to do to beat Perdue so decisively. But to me, and from my Washington, you know, glasses here, it certainly did seem that the voter restrictions that Perdue ended up passing and what Raffensperger ended up supporting in every single interview that he was asked when he went on his media tour really did inoculate those people to say, hey, if you were a Republican and had some problems with how 2020 went, you're upset about Donald Trump's loss, we have taken corrective measures. and we are sticking to the Democrats. And oh, by the way, do you see how much Democrats are complaining about this? I do think that that inoculated certainly Kemp, but also Raffensperger. So, you know, it was an indictment on Trump. You know, and I look at just, there has been a lot made about the former president and his political strategy, his political machinery. And when you look at all the endorsements that he does or trying to get people to get involved in races like he did on David Perdue, it isn't really much Tammany Hall, like this great grand political strategy. Yeah, and we're going to give you this great political playbook and you're a destined winner. It's more like somebody who's at the racetrack betting on horses. And it's like, hey, let's get another horse to run. Yeah. I like number four. Let's put $1,000 on that horse. That really seems to be going on, as opposed to here's how you're going to be able to win.
He endorsed insurance commissioner candidates, right? Yes. And you're just like, what are you doing? You're like, step away from the FanDuel, dude. You know, put the app away. Greg, Democratic crossover votes. How important? The difference between Raffensperger getting into a runoff and not?
Yeah, it is the difference between it. There's no way about around that, right? I mean, we're talking about anecdotal evidence, of course, because we'll never know
Who those Democrats voted for. Yeah, I was just going to say, what is the rule? And is it any ballot? Pick a ballot? What's the Georgia rule on primary?
Yeah, you can. It's any ballot. But
any registered voter walks in and could pick a ballot.
Yep. Interesting. But what we know is that there were about 8 to 10% of the early votes in the Republican primary were Democrats who voted in the 2020 Democratic primary. So, you know, these are folks who voted for, you know, the Joe Biden or for John Ossoff or whoever in the Democratic primary 2 years ago, who decided suddenly to pick up and vote in the Republican race. Some of them might be, you know, switched over and now are true conservatives or whatever.
Right.
But others, some might have voted strategically, right? There are some who decided to, you know, thought that maybe David Perdue would be more vulnerable to Stacey Abrams. But many of them, I mean, really, every single one of the voters who I've talked to who crossed over, and I've talked to a lot, I mean, people come up to me in coffee shops and tell me they crossed over. Happened Monday. They've all voted for Kemp and or Raffensperger to send a message to punish the Trump-backed candidates. Stacey Abrams' campaign estimates as many as 40,000 in the early voting. They projected those 40,000 voters. And so in Kemp's case, it didn't matter, right? He won by 50 points. It's insane. But in a race like Brad Raffensperger, when he just came right over the 50% margin, those few extra thousand votes matter.
Hey, pause there. We'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
All right, let's talk about November. Would you rather be Herschel Walker or Brian Kemp, Greg?
Right now, Brian Kemp, probably, right? Herschel Walker has a past of violence against women and erratic behavior and lies about his academic record and exaggerations about his business. And just as we saw just last, you know, on Tuesday night, an inability to handle questions about his policy issues. Whereas Brian Kemp's, you know, been there, done that. He'll still have Donald Trump's opposite. You know, Donald Trump didn't wake up this morning and just decide I like Brian Kemp.
But he might. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. You just maybe not today and maybe not tomorrow, but at some point he might.
He might, maybe. I mean, you know, I just given all, I mean, given the extraordinary effort he put into it.
And he makes usually no effort, right? I mean, that's the thing you got to understand about Donald Trump. He usually does nothing for people he supports. He actually put his money, a little bit of his money, where his mouth was with Purdue.
3 million plus, but also look at the other things he did. You know, he
TV ads. Taped, he was in the ads.
Taped TV ad and film and radio ads. He literally, I mean, his operation cleared the field for David Perdue. They convinced Vernon Jones, a former Democrat who was running for governor against Kemp, to jump over into a congressional race. He held in-state rallies, primarily aimed at Brian Kemp, several of them. So, and then called into all sorts of tele-rallies in the final days of the campaign. So, you know, like picked up a finger or two to didn't just sit back and send a press release or two. He actually really did put effort behind it. So it could. And Governor Kemp knows that. And that, you know, his stance in all this has been, he will not say a public negative word about Brian Kemp. I mean, about right. Donald Trump. He doesn't want to further antagonize right. The former president because he knows he needs the 20 or so percent of that hard MAGA core to come back out in order to beat Stacey Abrams.
You know, it's been fascinating, Mark, to watch. It does feel as if Republicans are struggling at how to get at Warnock. You know, Abrams, for better or for worse, is poll. I mean, I think we know that race is a 51-49 race. It's just going to be, right? They're well-known. Everybody has an opinion. It's really going to be about turnout at the end of the day, which is cliche, but something there. I think with Warnock, it does. I mean, it feels like the Republicans have to come up with a better answer than, hey, it's really about Joe Biden.
Yeah. So Warnock's brand new ad that he just came out with talks about him giving tornado assistance to people who were hit in 2021, just going directly at the constituent service, the local angle, getting it far away from Washington, and even like talking about some of the Washington debates on the bipartisan infrastructure bill or things that maybe they want to try to get back and build back better, and certainly not touching President.
Very above the fray. He's right. Trying to be above the fray in some ways. Hey, I'm new here. This place, you know, I'm just trying to do my job.
And Chuck, as we often talk about, the senators and the incumbent senators who are most vulnerable are people who just weren't elected a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years mm-hmm. ago, or 4 years ago. It's the people who've been in Washington for 10, 15, right. 20 years. And so that is going to be the hard thing for Republicans to do when it comes to Warnock in this race. And, you know, as Greg was just mentioning, you know, Herschel Walker is a political neophyte. We saw Donald Trump do really well being a neophyte in 2016. Although, in fairness, Donald Trump really hadn't been, you know, he had endorsed Mitt Romney in 2012. He'd been a fixture of Fox News.
Right.
But, you know, Herschel Walker being able to do this, you know, but I will, to your original question on who would you rather end up being? Do you want to be Herschel Walker or do you want to be Brian Kemp? I'd be Brian Kemp with this one important caveat. With either Donald Trump's neutrality or with his support. Because right. we have seen, and speaking of Raphael Warnock, that if Donald Trump decides to actually kamikaze pilot this
right.
this race, he can end up doing a whole lot of damage to Brian Kemp.
Well, it's amazing. He first lost narrowly in Georgia, then lost the two Senate seats, and now he's getting clobbered in primary. So you would think, you know, the definition of insanity is, you would think we shall see. Greg, we talked about a little bit about this yesterday on the television airwaves, but it was interesting to me to hear Brian Kemp say the P word when talking about Stacey Abrams, which is president. And it strikes me, and this is the question I have for the Abrams camp, what is their rationale for running? How much pressure are they going to have to pledge 4 years on that front? And what is her, you know, one of my big critiques of David Perdue from day one is, what's his rationale? Why does he want to be governor? I understand why he's running against Kemp, but he never said why he wanted to be governor, right?
Yeah.
He never explained what he wanted to do. What does Stacey Abrams want to do? And is that clear yet?
I can answer both those. Well, first, David Perdue's rationale was he thought only he could unite the Republican Party to defeat Stacey Abrams. He did unite the Republican Party. He just united it against him. Secondly, Stacey Abrams made it very clear right when she got in the race that she would not run for president in 2024 if she won. So she had to, you know, I think I had that in my initial story about her launching. It doesn't matter, you know, because if you're Brian Kemp and you're Republicans, you're going to keep on saying that all she's using is.
By the way, Bill Clinton in 1990 pledged he was going to serve all 4 years if he got reelected in 1990.
Barack Obama too. Remember,
yeah,
Chuck?
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. So unfortunately, whether it's fair or not to Stacey Abrams, past rhetoric from past politicians makes her pledges harder to accept.
Yeah. Whether you know, fair. When she was a teenager, she mapped out her future, and she hasn't stuck to it because she thought she would be Atlanta city mayor, but she mapped out her future and always bent toward the executive. You know, she saw herself as a mayor. She saw herself as a governor. She saw herself as the president.
And she hasn't been like, shy about someday running for president. No, she has said
not at all.
Right.
Not
so it is, she is not, she does not back away from ambition. She has never done that. But it does seem as if she has to see if she can avoid making this a referendum. Kemp's desperately trying to make this a referendum on Stacey Abrams. That seems pretty clear to me. Yeah.
Raphael Warnock wants this. I mean, Herschel Walker wants this to be a referendum on Joe Biden. And Brian Kemp wants this to be a referendum on Stacey Abrams. And again, it's because she has become the arch villain of Georgia GOP since 2018. If you're running for dog catcher, you're talking about Stacey Abrams in Georgia. And so it's easier. And if there is a central theme to his campaign message and David Perdue's, it's only I can beat Stacey Abrams, right? That's how he figures he can unify the MAGA branch of the Republican Party with the other branches that he's already, you know, coalesced. So, you know, her defining reason for running, it's going to revolve around many of the issues you hear on the campaign trail, expanding healthcare access. You know, if you ask her why she's running, she'll give you a long list, but at the center of it is expanding Medicaid.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's something that, you know, it's of course a core issue for Democrats, but polls, including Atlanta Journal-Constitution polls, always show a broad majority. It's like gun laws, always show a broad majority of voters want to see that expanded. And when it comes to gun laws, a broad majority wants to see it restricted.
Greg, I'm gonna leave Georgia here for a minute, and I want to wrap up a couple things with Mark on the rest of the states. But I've had this theory about Georgia and Georgia Democrats, and I'm curious your theory on it. As bleak as things are nationally for the Democratic Party, and the frustrations that Democrats have, certain constituencies feel like Biden isn't delivered, or Pelosi isn't delivered, or Schumer isn't delivered, that some of those key constituencies in Georgia are so devoted to Abrams and Warnock and Warnock's success that even if they're turned off by Biden, they're showing up to vote in Georgia. I have this theory that Georgia Democrats could get pummeled in 49 states and win at least one of these two big races in Georgia just because of the connection, the importance that many in the Democratic base have for Abrams and Warnock's success.
These races are going to be so close. You count Stacey Abrams out at your own peril, right? I mean, we've learned that in Georgia. You know, we thought she would be, you know, a marginal character, a marginal political figure after her defeat in 2018, and she's anything but that. You know, if anything, her profile and her stature raised tremendously since that. She got much stronger, right? Even Governor Kemp kind of joked about that. And she goes, everyone who I beat becomes a bigger deal after I beat them. so, you know, I think that by the time October rolls around, we'll see neck and neck polls. Yeah. We'll have a lot more attention, and everything these two candidates say will be parsed over.
Yeah, no, it will be. You know, Mark, if there was a quick little, and I know we got to wrap up here, the rest of Tuesday night felt like the establishment won everywhere. Establishment Republicans, Katie Britt did well. Kay Ivey escaped a runoff. John Bozeman escaped a runoff in Arkansas. Henry Cuellar may end up winning. That's a semi-establishment victory there. And obviously Georgia, the heart and soul of the quote-unquote establishment, even this Minnesota primary by a point, it looks like. I mean, it does look like, at least for this Tuesday, the establishment struck back.
Yeah. And Chuck, you know, I think we're going to continue to have this ping pong every single kind of primary. It was just like last week's, where a Democratic incumbent, Kurt Schrader, looks like he's like destined to defeat. Progressives got a big win in Pennsylvania 12 with Summer Lee. But then, yeah, you're exactly right that the establishment kind of struck back. And a lot of it has to do with geography. And you mentioned that Texas 28 race, and it just strikes me that we've had this conversation before, that being a progressive insurgent the way Jessica Cisneros was in that runoff isn't necessarily the greatest probably issue ideological makeup when you're talking about the Texas-Mexico border, where, and that's where I right. grew up, where even a lot of Democrats have pickup trucks, they have guns, and you know, Cisneros was bringing in Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren to San Antonio, which makes up about 25% of the district. The other 75% was right on the border and was not probably hospitable ground to Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders politics. But on the other hand, there will be other primaries where we will probably end up right. seeing the progressives being able to flex their muscles.
Wisconsin.
And then the other thing, you know, Chuck, when you mentioned Alabama and Katie Britt's success, I mean, Alabama has been a state in which the Richard Shelby wing of the Republican Party has fared a whole lot better usually than the Mo Brooks wing of the party, the Roy Moore wing of the Republican yeah. Party. And so, you know, having Shelby and Mitch McConnell, you know, put in some effort for Katie yeah. Britt, her showing getting almost 45% in that three-way race was pretty impressive from that McConnell-Shelby wing.
I think it was too. And I think it's you have to consider her the favorite. Greg and Mark, you know, it sometimes our politics are tough to cover some days because of the paralysis that the real world creates, and we watch the people we cover do nothing, and it gets frustrating. But anyway, appreciate the two of you, and appreciate Breaking Down Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, Chuck.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Gopin Green, Elias Miller, and Matt Rivera. And our theme music is composed by Spoke Media. Meet the Press Now is coming soon. It starts June 6th on demand. And also, you can catch us at 4 p.m. Eastern on NBC News Now. Meet the Press Reports is available to binge right now. Check us out on YouTube. And The Big Show is available every Sunday morning wherever you get your NBC programming. So thanks for listening. Until we upload again.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.